ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Whoa. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, is behind the glass. How's everybody doing? Everybody have a good weekend?
Heck yeah, Cougs. Cougs won big. That was fantastic. Everybody was giddy. Paul actually didn't think it was embarrassing. I just talked to him.
Yeah, about that.
And
I wonder how Purdue's feeling right now. I wonder if they would like to trade spots with the embarrassing Houston Cougars.
How'd their backcourt do?
Purdue's?
Yeah, that's what I kept saying. I mean, when we were talking about it,
that's
like,
what everybody said. Their backcourt's been terrible all year.
Well, but when they're good, then that's the number one seed. And when they're not, that something like that, what happened this weekend, could happen in a hurry. And that kid, I've had all these conversations with my buddies. That kid reminds me of like a very, very slow Yao Ming that's not as skilled. But everybody's talking about this kid. He's going to be like the kid from Iowa where you might win player of the year in college, but it's not going to translate to the next level like some people think.
I think he's got a better chance to be a pro than Luka Garza. You're right. He's not really a huge NBA prospect. Like, right. I've been hearing that he might not even be a first-round draft pick.
I agree.
Purdue did such a bad job of getting him the ball. Like, he is a dominant college basketball player. Mm-hmm. They didn't give him a chance in that game, in that loss. But the Houston Cougars are one seed after they were able to dust off what Paul Gallant called an embarrassing first-round performance, even though they never trailed in the second half and won by 11 points and won one of six games that is necessary and required to win an NCAA championship. We're able to beat Auburn after being down by 10 at the half, a dominating second half. Second half for the ages. And they're on to the Sweet 16 for the fourth year in a row. Well, not really a year. Fourth tournament in a row because of that COVID cancellation. Yep. They'll get Miami on Friday in Kansas City. We'll talk plenty about the Houston Cougars and the NCAA tournament throughout the show. Joe, did you have a good weekend? Everything good on your front?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, good weekend. No complaints for me.
Good.
Oh, really? Unless you text them. That's fine.
What?
Oh, it's just a little inside joke on the side where Joe was just a little bit spiced up this weekend on text.
No.
So it's fine.
I feel like I missed something there. Should I know about this?
No. It was just a little back and forth we had where I didn't realize I caught Joe not only on the getting out of the wrong side of the bed, but like off the wrong end of the couch. I don't know. He was
a little spicy Joe.
Joe.
I was not being spicy.
I like
it. It's fake news.
When he responds to me using my first name, it's either Barry Warner or my mom. And neither one of them are happy. So the fact
man.
That he, yeah, I was like, whoa, slow
I
that
like
down.
That makes me happy.
Of course
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. You know who didn't have a good weekend?
Who? The Houston Astros.
Yeah, the Houston Astros and Jose Altuve. Altuve has a broken thumb. He's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. Daniel Bard got him with the, had to be a fastball, hit him on the right thumb. He's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks, needs surgery. What is let's just start with your thoughts whenever you saw this news. I was, you know, calling a basketball game and saw about it, you know, hours after the fact. What was your initial impression of the injury and then finding out the next day officially that a broken thumb and probably going to be out for a third of the season?
Yeah, it was an old bleep moment, and I'm not going to lie, after the Cougs game and for the majority of Sunday night as well, I was watching the World Baseball Classic, and the games were entertaining, and there was a lot of big-time talent on the field. But when I turned it on, I flipped over after the Cougs game, and I looked over and I said, wait a minute, where's Altuve? And I thought, well, you know, they probably pulled him at a certain point or, you know, whatever the case. And then all of a sudden, I get on Twitter and I start looking, and I'm like, oh, bleep, are you kidding me? And it's one thing when we were actually not making light of it, but we were, you know, talking about it kind of in passing when Diaz got hurt from the Mets, and you're like, you lose your closer. And then we had said, hey, at a certain point, the WBC is going to get some scrutiny if some player gets hurt in the process of playing a tournament that means nothing except for national pride for your team, for your country, right before the major league season. But it's always a little different when it's somebody else. But when it happens to you and your favorite team, it's different. Because now everyone was losing their mind on social media. And everybody was crapping on the WBC. And everybody was taking shots at, you know, and saying players shouldn't play and all these other things. The bottom line is a freak accident, okay? It happens. It could have happened in spring training as well, because we've seen enough of players that don't have their stuff, and they're working on things, and pitches get away. It's extremely unfortunate. It sucks as an Astros fan, but it's part of reality that anything can happen any day from the time you get out of bed till the time you call it a day and go back to bed, and even while you're sleeping. It sucks, but it's not the WBC's fault.
Yeah, I think it's a great take. I think it's a really good call because I don't think you can compare the Edwin Diaz and Jose Altuve injuries side by side. Like, Edwin Diaz's injury to me was a WBC injury. How many times are you celebrating after recording
true.
A final out in a spring training game? Never.
Very true.
Like, he was celebrating a big moment. He was jumping up and down, got injured. That was a WBC injury. Because I've seen a lot of WBC hot takes. And look, I think the WBC is awesome. I think it, from a baseball fan in me, I think it's incredibly entertaining. I think it's a lot of fun. Ratings have been high. The attendance has been really good. I think the WBC, from a baseball perspective, is a lot of fun.
Well, you know what it is, too, Jeremy? It's spring training the way you wish spring training was, where you weren't seeing the AA, AAA guys a lot. And split squads and half a lineup. You're seeing real talent when you're jonesing for baseball before the season starts. That's the ultimate solution.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go as far to say as that I want spring training like that every year. Like, I like that the WBC is only every now and then. I think it adds to the allure. I think it adds to the entertainment and the fun of it. But from a baseball fan, it's great to see that kind of baseball being played when you're right. You're jonesing for baseball, and you're just waiting for opening day, and instead you're going to have these international teams playing with these all-star lineups, and it's going to be a tremendous amount of fun. But you can have a baseball perspective and then an Astros perspective, because we talked about this after Edwin Diaz got hurt. The WBC is a lot of fun, but boy, I wish the Astros weren't involved in it, because you have the Astros as your priority more than like any nation that you're rooting for in the WBC. And I'm not going to sit here and make a call, all the Astros should be banned from the WBC. That's a hot take. That's silly. But the Jose Altuve injury was a baseball injury.
Yep.
Edwin Diaz was a WBC injury. You're not celebrating after you record a final out an inning in spring training in West Palm Beach, Florida. But Jose Altuve is going to face live pitching. Whenever you're facing live pitching, there is always a shot that you're going to get hit, and there's always a shot you're going to get hit in the hand. So that was just a baseball injury. He got hit with a fastball on the hand. It broke his thumb. He's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. That was a baseball injury that happens whenever you're a hitter. You're going to get hit. A lot of times, whenever you get hit, it's going to lead to some sort of injury. Unfortunately, this is an injury that's going to cost, in my opinion, I was doing the numbers on this, and I had a broken thumb in high school. You know, probably had high school numbers very similar to Jose Altuve's career numbers in Major League Baseball, at least on the average standpoint. This is an injury that is going to be an issue, obviously. Like, we've seen the estimated timeline. The Astros have said they don't have a timeline. I'm of the opinion, Blankers, and look, standings is going to dictate a lot of this. Like, if you stumble out of the gates, maybe the Astros don't play as well as they're capable of playing. Maybe Seattle's playing over their heads, and for some reason you're 6 games behind the Mariners in the middle of May. It might expedite how quickly you're trying to get Jose Altuve acclimated, the ramp-up period, trying to get him ready to go. I'm of the opinion of, okay, just bite the bullet. Jose Altuve is going to miss a third of the season, maybe not a quarter of the season. You get him going. He's kind of your acquisition in the summer. I want him back on June 1st. Look into the calendar. I think that that's a sustainable, suitable goal. It's a third of the season. It's closer to 50, 55 games than it is 40 games. But I'm of the mindset of just get him right. We can't have a situation where he's like rushed back too quickly and then it cost him another trip to the IL. They need to get him all the way back. That way he's ready for the final 100 games. Hopefully the standings don't dictate that the Astros have to rush him back sooner.
Well, and I think, you know, you can try and you look at it however you're going to. It's obviously a negative the minute it happens, but you can spin it real quick into a positive by saying, look, he kind of has been worn out in the last couple of years. And we know that, you know, he's had to really fight and claw and scratch after a slow start last year to get to 300, to do the things, but he was able to do it. And if you look at it from a McCullers perspective of it took him so long to get back, when he did, though, he was effective and he was able to do a lot of what you wanted him to do, and he was well-rested and he didn't have the wear and tear on his arm that had caught up with him in the past. If you look at it from an Altuve perspective, you say, yeah, from our show when we were doing what's he going to do for the year, the numbers are going to be skewed now. But you know what? If he comes in fresh and when he comes in he's healthy and he just settles in, you know, he could. Your playoffs could be the first couple months of the season, but on a good side, once you've already played, you're hot, you're warm, you're comfortable, and you capitalize even more on the playoffs, because he struggled in the playoffs the last couple of years in a lot of ways. So maybe you do look at it as a blessing. But if you look at it from an Astros perspective, now you start wondering, no, the answer wasn't Yuli, but we had talked about over and over again a utility guy, a guy that's a veteran utility guy that maybe used to be a starter that could have been a guy that you could use in a variety of different ways that could be a really solid piece only as a luxury. Now it's not a luxury. Now it's more not, I want to say a necessity either, but it's something you got to consider because we talked about even till Profar, and Profar just reached a deal. But there
Thanks
was
Altuve.
Yeah, exactly. There's Gene Segura. There were guys there that could have helped eliminate the amount of stress that this is putting on people with Altuve missing 2 months. They're not there anymore, and now you're left with Dubon and Hensley and, you know, second base by committee for an extended period of time, which no one was prepared for at the start of the season.
No, you can thank the Jurickson Profar signing the very next day to Jose Altuve. Like, Profar needs to send a cut of that salary to Altuve, or at the very least send him a Christmas card, because there's no doubt that Scott Boras, he's probably talking with the Rockies for a long time about Profar, but the moment that Profar got hurt, I bet you Scott Boras went to Colorado and goes, hey, you might want to get this done quickly as possible because the Astros could be shopping around for a very minimum a utility player to add to their 26-man roster and potentially a starting second baseman.
I'll tell you what they're going to do now, too. Dana Brown, who's concerned and rightfully so, but I can tell you what I think they're going to do now before they even, you know, some people had said trade. Look, eventually a trade might come up, but I don't think so for something like this. They're going to just watch the cut line. They're going to watch transactions as we get close to opening day, and inevitably there's going to be a team or two that cut loose a veteran that you're going to look at and say, okay, there's a better solution for a 2 month period of time with experience than the two guys I have to choose from on my own roster. And he's going to be looking for that type of player to hopefully fill a gap and bridge it until he comes back, where you don't have to go out and give up prospects or do too much to get what you need to get by. And I think that that's going to be a realistic approach for Dana Brown, because we've seen it in the past where guys get cut loose because they just don't fit the puzzle anymore. And hopefully there's someone there that can help the Astros, because otherwise he might have to think about a trade that he didn't want to make or think he was going to have to before the season.
That's usually a pretty soft cut, like, because minor league options, things like that. Mm-hmm. Usually there's the quality of player that's available after those spring training cuts heading into opening day usually aren't very good. Usually it's kind of like washed up players, but maybe you can get a washed up player that has, you know, a decent 2 months, because this is not something where you need a guy long term. You need a dude for, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. 713-780-ESPN. I want to dive into that a little bit more. Did the Astros, and look, it wasn't all Dana Brown. Dana Brown wasn't here the entire offseason. There was Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, Enos Cabell, all of those dudes, Jim Crane as well. Did the Astros miss the boat with the idea of a utility guy, somebody that could be a starter if called upon because of injury? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776, on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on the Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do the Astros miss the boat this offseason? Blankers, I think you and I are pretty aligned on
everything.
Most things.
Yep.
We wanted, I don't want to speak for you, but I wanted Jim Crane to spend all of the money available under the competitive balance tax. Knowing you, I would guess that you wanted the Astros to spend all of the money available at least to the competitive balance tax.
Yeah, right? Look, the only reason why you don't is you leave yourself a little wiggle room preparing for a la something like this, where an injury might occur or something unforeseen happens and you have to do something later in the process. But other than that, yeah, you knew I was, and we were both anti-pay Verlander, and you started that train rolling well before anybody else.
Yeah, September 1st.
Well, look, I give you credit for this. You like to bash on me when I get credit for stuff.
No, I don't at all.
You're like, yeah, you're just blowing
your
horn.
I just called it in the first segment. I just said you had a great take.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. I mean, even a blind squirrel finds a nut. But from the standpoint of the money, Verlander didn't make sense. But keeping this core group together and keeping, you know, the good mix now of the next generation following up, too, with Yordan and Tucker following up behind Bregman and Altuve. And the guys that, you know, keep this train rolling and keep this golden era, you know, intact. That's the way to do business. That's smart professional sports these days, no matter what sport it is. But in particular, as it relates to the Astros, not messing up a good thing, because one bad contract can completely screw up a really good plan. And so I was very much on board with everything that they had done with Verlander. I wasn't on board in the fact that, as you and I would go back and forth, well, they still could get a corner outfielder. They still could add something to the pitching staff. They could do this, they could do that. And then all of a sudden we were like, well, I mean, I guess because the roster's so good, they felt like they didn't have to do too much, but now here we are.
Remember the Astros free agency kind of started off with a fury. They locked up Montero quickly,
yep.
And the reason that they locked him up quickly is because they gave him a few more million dollars than he probably would have gotten on the market per year. They got Jose Abreu quickly, and then they waited a little while and signed Michael Brantley. But the Astros currently have $20 million under the competitive balance tax. I remember having shows over the winter where we were like, okay, well, what's left for the Astros? We wanted them to spend up to the competitive balance tax. Maybe you leave a few million dollars in wiggle room. That way you can try to make a move at the deadline potentially without surpassing that competitive balance tax. And I pulled up this tweet that I had way back on December 19th where I said, find the best right-hand utility guy you can get on a one-year deal with the money that you currently have. Now, Jurickson Profar is a switch hitter. Jurickson Profar is a guy we've been talking about for a long time. And the idea of having a Jurickson Profar was a utility player that can fill in at every single position and be your super utility. Ben Zobrist was the first ever like super utility guy, the way Tampa Bay and Joe Maddon deployed Ben Zobrist. The Astros have had their own versions over the years. Marwin Gonzalez was that super utility guy who actually led you in RBIs in the World Series year. The most recent one was Aledmys Diaz, a guy that can start at every single position when you have an injury. And look, this might be a spoiler alert, but injuries happen in sports, so it's inevitable that an injury is going to happen. We've been telling you that all offseason. It's not this like hot take. Sports have injuries, so you knew an injury was coming. I think that the Astros failed here. I think they failed to prepare for having somebody that could fill in immediately and be a starter whenever there is injury. And it's unfortunate for Altuve that it's going to happen at the start of the year and he's going to miss a third of the season. But this is why you make this kind of move in December and you don't wait all the way into March. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, David Hensley's ready. David Hensley can start those 50 games for the Houston Astros at second base. I like David Hensley. I'm excited to see what David Hensley looks like for the next 50 games. I wish that it was Jose Altuve and not David Hensley, but I'm cool with David Hensley. I liked the little bit that I've seen from him. I liked his numbers in Sugarland, so that's cool. Like, okay, like David Hensley, second baseman, 50 games. Let's see what you got. I'm all right with that. But it's the trickle-down effect. How do you feel about Bly Madris making this team? How do you feel about J.J. Mattejevic making this team? So now all of a sudden you put yourself in a position of weakness, because now if there's another injury, and again, spoiler alert, injuries happen in sports, you're looking at Mauricio Dubon as an everyday player.
Yeah, look, and I'll throw the name in that I was adamant about as someone they should consider, and that was Gene Segura, because another guy that's a really solid contact hitter, plays multiple infield positions, been there, done that. Astros saw it firsthand in the World Series and know that he's coming off being a starter for the National League champions, so you know that the guy can play, and he was just looking for a home. And obviously, the same way Abreu said, after watching the playoffs, I knew I wanted to be a part of that, I wanted to be on that team, and he got his wish. I think a lot of people, you know, got over the cheating scandal and started saying what we thought was going to happen at some certain point. Hey, that's a destination where I can win. I want to play for the Astros. I want to be a part of that. And I think any one of those veterans that we mentioned would have been a really good fit for this team. And it's not like they couldn't afford it. And so sometimes you get a little too cute, because it's one thing to say the Altuve injury kind of sets you back. But oh no, now we're talking about when we said Verlander we'd be okay with Verlander leaving. Part of it was because we expected Lance McCullers to be there. Now he was over everything that he had been through. But now when you parlay and you start putting together, well, McCullers and Altuve, now you got a different set of circumstances that you could have prepared for, but you didn't. You know, a lot of people said, and even Dusty after the fact was talking about, I thought we should go look at another arm for the rotation. No one, I think, thought that, but you also had to be realistic that the rest of your farm system wasn't as close to being major league ready as Hunter Brown was, and you still didn't know if he was going to be good for a full season. But you felt like you had a position of luxury. You were in a good spot with all the starters you had. Now, in retrospect, you could have used another extra arm, but more so than that, it was that utility position and the fact that with so many older guys and guys the way Dusty likes to give days off alone, you could have made the case for, hey, come play for us. There's multiple positions you're going to play, but you're going to get enough at-bats and games in to where you're going to be almost like a semi-starter, and it's going to work for both parties. They elected not to do that, and now, not that it's panic mode, but it puts Dana Brown in a tough position early in his first year because now everybody's looking for answers.
See, I'm a big believer in most sports that the teams that win and win at a very high level are the ones that have the fewest weaknesses. It's not necessarily about the star power. Like, there's some certain examples that would differ from that. Quarterback, like, you really want a star there. Best player in an NBA team, you really want a star there. But especially in baseball, you don't necessarily win with the stars. Like, Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, what have they done? How did Aaron Judge and the New York Yankees look last year in the playoffs? I'm a big believer in baseball that the teams that win are the teams with the fewest weaknesses. And if you go back to last year's team, the Astros had no weaknesses on the pitching staff. That's not to say they were perfect, but they had no weaknesses on the pitching staff once the playoffs rolled around. And then even with the lineup, like, you might point to Martin Maldonado and be like, well, the guy can't hit above the Mendoza line. Nobody calls one of the best games in all of Major League Baseball, so that guy can't be a weakness for you. Or even Chaz McCormick, like, he's solid enough to where that's a pretty low or pretty high floor. Like, you're getting some good production there in center field.
And take it a step further, Jeremy. And then, you mentioned Maldonado. Well, the one thing that you knew about Maldonado was, aside from that, was that they also knew they were looking for an insurance policy. So the insurance policy was at the trade deadline. And then suddenly they got Vasquez. Now they've got the best of both worlds. Now they got a guy that can hit, that can get behind the plate. They got a guy that can defend and really coach the pitching staff that's been behind home plate. And now in the playoffs, you can alternate, you can switch, you can do things that put you in a great spot. They didn't do that for the regular season this year. And I get it. You're comfortable. You're coming off the high of winning a World Series. Not that you feel invincible, but you feel like you're set in almost every way. The only thing that you could have said differently about the pitching staff a year ago, both relievers and starters, were, well, they really didn't have a loogie. But they really didn't need one, because when you get into the advanced numbers, you knew that you had righties that could get out lefties. But from the standpoint of, from a roster, from an everyday playing perspective, with the amount of versatility they had on their bench, with the way even a Mancini was brought in to do the same thing, insurance in multiple positions, you would think that, I know it's not Click, it's Dana Brown, but whoever saw the value in that and understood that the one thing that can derail this fast-moving train of success would be injuries more than anything else.
And utility guy made sense the entire offseason. Yep. We were pushing for utility guy the entire offseason. And look, if you're a David Hensley guy and you're saying that David Hensley is going to be just fine at second base, okay, like, that's fine. I'll concede that. I really am looking forward to seeing 50 games, perhaps more, of what David Hensley looks like as a major leaguer. But you also have to understand the fact that David Hensley might not be a good major league player. And then what? Then Mauricio Dubon's getting 25, 30 starts there. Then Rylan Brannon, if you heard that name before, congratulations. All of a sudden, he's a dude that's starting. Bly Madris is a guy that's on this 40-man roster. J.J. Matijevic. And some of those guys can't even play second base. So, like, middle infielder, a priority. Super utility would have been good in that area. And here's the other thing. Like, Dusty Baker gives guys days off. Like, Dusty Baker, and all managers do. Like, this isn't unique only to Dusty Baker. You might argue that Dusty does it more than some other guys. I would argue that Dusty has the luxury of doing that because he feels he has a team that's guaranteed a playoff spot. So why not do that? So, like, those are conversations that can be had. But this just isn't David Hensley all of a sudden taking all of Jose Altuve's at-bats. It's going to be David Hensley's taking all of Jose Altuve's at-bats. And then when David Hensley, Jeremy Pena, Alex Bregman, Jose Abreu, when those guys need days off, that means Mauricio Dubon's going to have more at-bats than he was supposed to have. It means to the last position player on this roster is going to have more at-bats than he was supposed to. It's the trickle-down effect more than it's David Hensley.
And that's the key, Jeremy, because in the past, your last roster or last two roster spots, you were open and more flexible with because you were set with Aledmys Diaz. You were set with guys that if you did have all those guys needing days off, or you did have guys go down for a week or 2 weeks, you knew you had a solid, better than average veteran on the bench that could play multiple positions, that gave you a good bat, but gave you a decent glove, and gave you a lot less worry. And suddenly that guy's not there. So now the last two roster spots mean more. Now there's more of a scope down going, hey, who do you have that's going to make Dusty sleep a little better at night knowing, okay, he's out, but I've got a veteran guy that we know Dusty needs a lot of trusty. He doesn't trust these young guys like he's going to trust an Aledmys Diaz or a resume that says I've played and been there and done that to where I could just plug him and play and feel pretty good about it, no matter if he's filling in for a guy on a day off or an injury happens. That's where they missed the boat. That's where everybody, deservedly so, can get a little upset with the Astros. Now, I believe that to their answer would be to that, well, we were in disarray in the front office. We were trying to figure out a general manager, and we really didn't have...
That's not a good answer, though, because, I mean, they signed Abreu, they signed Montero, they were making moves.
But they Montero was keeping a guy in-house, and from an Abreu standpoint, you knew you were going to probably move on from Yuli. The guy wanted to be here. He made, you know, he wanted to get the deal done sooner rather than later. But I think it's that next level of really kind of diving down and dissecting the whole roster to say, where could we still use insurance, help, you know, an extra? And I don't think enough time was spent on that.
I mean, maybe you could be right. You know, maybe there wasn't enough time spent on that, but I would say that's a failure. Like, Dana Brown wasn't hired yesterday. Dana Brown signed Christian Javier. So, like, they've been making moves. They've been doing things. Now, you could be right where they weren't spending enough time on this one specific area, and that's why I'm extra salty about it. Because, like, this was the one thing that the Astros needed to do to cross off what I would have considered a really good offseason. You got a left fielder. Mm-hmm. You got a first baseman. You got a back end of the bullpen arm by re-signing Montero. Now, bring in that super utility guy. Make sure that you're prepared for an injury. Because, look, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And I think the Astros failed to prepare with the idea that an infielder could go down. And now they're in a spot where they're hoping that David Hensley's really good. And then they're going to have like a lot of at-bats from Mauricio Dubon and some dude that we've never heard of as well. 713-780-ESPN. The Astros fell this offseason by failing to prepare for potential injury. 713-780-3776. And what does this mean from an Astros front now? What does that lineup look like? We've had a lot of conversation about who bats second. Well, the Astros just lost their leadoff dude. Who is the leadoff hitter now for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Dr. O and his staff do a fantastic job taking care of people on a daily basis that, quite frankly, are trying to win the day. They're trying to be better, have more energy, get more things done like they used to be able to do. That, quite honestly, they just have lost the ability to do because they don't have enough energy. Both men and women are finding out by going to Apollo Men's Health that all the different ways they can do hormone therapy has been a huge help, and it's given them more energy and the ability to get more things done. It's absolutely fantastic. You want to start out with an easier approach? Try a B12 shot like I get every week. It gives you more energy. It gives you a little bit more of a kickstart to your day, to where you can get more things accomplished by the time you lay your head on the pillow at night. Quite honestly, they got a bunch of services that could really help you. The best thing I can say is go to apollomh.com. Sign up for your first appointment after looking at all the services that they have to offer and seeing a few that might be able to help you. And then go in with an open mind and see if that approach will help you get where you need to go. Tell them where you're lacking. Tell them what your goals are. Tell them if it's a workout program, you want to get started and chart your progress, do a full body composition analysis, and then get all your numbers and then see when they make progress. You want to recover quicker after a workout, HGH peptide therapy, stuff for your smoothies, fat burners. They have those things too, but they have people in place that are there specifically to help you. And that's what's so great about what they're able to do for people. Check them out today and tell them I sent you by a free body composition analysis or a B12 shot on your first visit, but let the process go from there. They'll get your results. And they'll make sure that you reach your goals. They're going to take care of you on a daily basis. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jose Altuve has a broken thumb.
What?
Yeah, Jose Altuve is going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. I was starting to put this into the calendar a little bit. I think optimistically, he could miss a quarter of the season at best. I think I consider it conservative. I consider it a safe approach. I'm considering the big picture, not urgent to get Altuve back. I honestly want him to miss a third of the season. Okay. I want him to miss a third of the season, make sure that, you know, the recovery is the recovery. Like, once the bone heals, the bone heals. But you got to do the ramp up right. Like, don't rush the ramp up where Jose Altuve is just, you know, he's chomping at the bit to get back into the lineup, getting back up to the bigs. Do the ramp up right for the benefit of Jose Altuve, for the benefit of the Astros 2023 season, even if it costs you 2 weeks. even if it costs you 12 games because Altuve, you know, wants to be back. Say, No. We're doing this for the best interest of you, protecting the player from the player. We're doing it for the best interest of our long-term plans, not even long-term plans, just the long-term game of 2023. We need you healthy for the playoffs. We need you healthy in the fall. We don't care if you're back on May 15th. Like, do the ramp up right. That's kind of where I'm at. Let's get a good sample size on David Hensley to see who he is as a Major League Baseball player. The worst thing that the Astros could do is to make a worse situation worse. And the only way they can make a worse situation worse is if Jose Altuve and I fully believe that Jose Altuve will want to be back as quickly as possible. I think some of his quotes even said that. Protect Jose Altuve from Jose Altuve. Make sure that you do right by him and for the 2023 Houston Astros by not rushing him back.
I think the other thing that, like, to me is a huge advantage. Sorry, Joel. Is that
fine.
You popped up like out of nowhere?
Well, because I didn't see you coming. But go ahead.
You're looking down. Is that, you know, these expanded playoffs is huge. Like, that's why there's no rush. You have the extra playoff spot. You're good enough without Altuve, without McCullers, to make the playoffs to get that last wild card spot. And, like, I don't really care, frankly. Like,
see, that's a concern of mine, Joe. But the one concern I have with that statement right there, I think a lot of people feel that way, is they're just too comfortable thinking this season is last season. It's going to be they're going to coast. They're going to be in a good spot. I think that because there's two injuries you're talking about, because McCullers
three,
and now,
really.
That now you start thinking about, well, now it's impactful. Now it's got more of a little bit of a kick to it than just, oh, we'll get through that and we'll be fine. Because the other thing is, we just don't know. Seattle ramped up. There's better teams. You're playing a different schedule. It's a different year.
It's not that. It's that I don't care about making the playoffs as a one or two seed.
Yeah,
like,
I disagree
to me,
there.
Like, I think the Astros, once they're in the playoffs, we've seen them do it before. We saw it during the COVID season. They get in as a lower wild card seed. They don't win the division, but they're still one of the best teams in baseball when they're healthy. They can beat anybody. They can go
win three
games in Toronto.
But they got to be healthy, Joe. That's the key. They're in the driver's seat if this roster is healthy against anybody.
But I think Joe's idea, though, is to get healthy. Like, he's saying that he's willing to wait in Altuve to get healthy, even at the expense of the three seed over a two seed, which would cost you a bye.
But that's important, too. But here's the other thing. What you just said, Jeremy, is also fine and dandy, but we know that injuries happen. You said that as well. And when injuries happen, you get those guys healthy in the course of a regular 162, no matter how much Dusty rests them. Other guys are going to get hurt, too. You just hope it's not significant. Mm-hmm. And that could then be a steamrolling effect where it keeps you from getting home field advantage, getting the bye, getting the division championship, and things that will put you in the best position to win yet again, instead of giving you an extra obstacle or two that you don't need that sometimes, as they start stacking up, becomes insurmountable.
How would that obstacle happen, though? Like, I think we all agree with the premise. I think we all agree of, like, do right by Altuve. Like,
make sure
he's 100%.
But my
point is, everything else is random. Everything else is, like, the unknown.
Sure.
Any other injuries, like variants, like, we have no idea.
You can do things, and it's probably never too late. It's just more challenging and difficult because we're close to the start of the regular season. All the free agents have dried up. You have to use different ways to possibly get it done. But you still have to be, as much as you don't want to do anything that's just a knee jerk for a short term, you also realize that other things are going to happen throughout the season. And if you're extremely lucky and blessed and all of a sudden no other injuries happen, then so be it. But what you don't want is you assume we're going to win the division, or we're going to get in the playoffs no matter what. We're going to be okay. And then, you just get one thing after another, and suddenly you're not okay towards the last month and a half of the season.
No, they have to come out hot. Like, I don't want to over-exaggerate here. Yeah, they got to be good. Like, they can't have the fat cat syndrome, right, where they're full and happy coming off a World Series. And maybe this is what it took for them not to have that. Like, maybe it took, oh, crap, we're going to be playing without, you know, the straw that stirs the drink of the Houston Astros. Maybe this actually leads them to coming out of the gate a little more steady. I don't want to over-dramatize this and be like, well, the Astros got to come out hot. No, I think that the Astros are going to be fine. I still think they're going to win this division. But you're right. They can't afford to be back, 10 games behind Seattle whenever Jose Altuve is healthy. And all of a sudden, Jose Altuve is healthy. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to do these rehab assignments. I don't want to go back to extended spring training. I got to get back there and help my team. Like, that's what I fear. So the Astros need to stay, hopefully first place. But they need to be right there with Seattle when Jose Altuve is ready to come back.
Well, and here's the other thing, guys. We would have been having this conversation, I think, but not to this level, not to this level of urgency. As the regular season started, if you had Brantley out and Yordan out. Because now you could say the same thing about you didn't get any depth in the outfield. You didn't go out.
They haven't had a spring training at bat.
Yeah, you didn't go and get any depth in the outfield. So I think that it was coming, but it was going to be coming probably to a lesser degree. But people were going to start looking at it going, how come you didn't go get one more outfielder?
And you know what, Joel?
What?
You know who fixes both of that? Jurickson Profar.
Sure he does.
Profar can do all of that. Yes. That's why I was banging the table for Jurickson Profar, because he gives you insurance at second. He gives we didn't know that you needed insurance at second, let's be fair. Like hindsight 2020, I didn't know the Astros were going to need insurance at second. But I do know that injuries happen in sports, and I know that right now the Astros don't have a great backup second baseman, shortstop, third baseman, unless you think David Hensley's that guy. But everybody's moving up a role. Everyone's taking a seat down. Now, David Hensley's a starter, and your next best role player is Mauricio Dubon. Jurickson Profar is that guy in left field, too. Michael Brantley is not a lock to make this opening day roster. Cool. We got Jurickson Profar. Yordan Alvarez is known to be injury prone over the course of his career. Okay, well, cool. For 30 games, I have Jurickson Profar. That was the biggest failure this offseason. And yes, hindsight 2020 now, because a player has finally went down. But this wasn't the first time we've been banging the drum on this. We were banging the drum on this back in December.
That's exactly right. And that's the thing. It was both backup positions, but it was because we could even see. At that time, we couldn't see McCullers going down. We didn't know that yet. But we knew that from the standpoint of defensively, offensively, and lineup-wise, the lineup itself was fine. But we also knew that depth could be an issue, and that if you have the luxury of having the money and you're not going to re-sign Verlander, and you have even more means to get to what you need to do, then why not give yourself, the same way you did at the trade deadline a year ago, insurance policies in the outfield, infield. Everybody, the little laughing stock of Justin Verlander's personal center fielder was all fun and games with Dubon until you got to play him for 2 months. Now suddenly you got a problem no matter where he's playing, because it's not just a defensive guy put in late in a game. It's this guy is someone you're going to see at the plate almost every day for 2 months, and that should scare everyone.
Right. Everybody moves down a seat. Everybody's role becomes a little bit more. And now you're keeping a Joe Perez or, you know, a Bly Madris or a Brannon on this roster when it's like, who are these guys? Now they're there. They're big
leaguers.
Where's
Nico Badrum when you need him?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are saying Yuli Gurriel right now. Yuli Gurriel is not an option in the middle infield. And it's also my understanding, though, that I think that the Astros could sign him if they wanted to. It would depend, I believe, on what Yuli's contract is. But because it was a minor league deal, I think that the Astros, if they still really wanted Yuli, I think there's a way they could get him. I think it depends on the contract, though. I guess I shouldn't say that without knowing that contract. But it's like Matt Carpenter last year, remember? Remember, Matt Carpenter was on a minor league team. I can't remember. Maybe San Diego? Was he on the San Diego Padres minor league system?
He was playing somewhere. He was the Rangers.
That's right. It was the Rangers.
He was the Rangers.
Yeah, that's right. It was the Rangers. And then the Yankees signed him from the Rangers organization after Carpenter asked for his release. So it's not that hard for veterans to get out of those minor league contracts, but Yuli's not the answer at second. All right, let's get to that conversation. Who is the leadoff guy? Jose, like, we're talking about who the replacement is at second base for Altuve. David Hensley seems like the natural fit. Everybody's role has to expand a little bit with Altuve gone. But who's the leadoff hitter for the Astros? 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor Shark commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jordan says, am I tripping? Do you guys have the microphone set up to Chopped and Screwed today? Screwston. We're having some issues. Lamont said it too. We're having some issues with the what are we having issues with? The stream?
You guys sound drunk.
Joe George, we're having issues with the stream.
That means the app and the website and everything?
I don't know.
I just checked it. It looked good on mine, but we're working on it.
We're working on it. But it's our way to pay respect to the city. We're paying homage to Screwston with our Monday Screw Edition of the Killer Bees.
Screw Bees,
Chopped and Screwed, straight out of H-Town, baby.
Wow. You know, tops drop, Jeremy. I just want to let you know that.
I hope not.
If you know Fat Pat, you know tops drop in Houston. If you know your intros, you know.
Yeah, I'm very aware that that's what they play at the Fertitta Center in Houston. 713-780-ESPN. Who should be the Astros' leadoff guy now? We talked about the replacement. We talked about how the Astros, in our opinions, failed not signing a utility guy in the offseason. Even if you feel that the utility guy should be David Hensley. Okay, we'll have two. Like, I mean, you look, there's 13 guys and 13 position players that are going to make this roster. You have injury concerns with Brantley and Yordan, and then attrition of baseball. You're going to have a dude land on the IL every now and then. The Astros failed there. But now they have a decision to make on who they want to use at the top of the lineup. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. What's your solution to this, Blankers? Who would you like to see leading off the Astros offense on opening day?
Gut feeling when I first started thinking about it, when I saw the reports coming out of how long Altuve was going to be out, was Bregman. I just thought about Bregman being the same kind of guy because of his eye for the strike zone, because of the fact that he can work a lot of walks, he can still set the table for others. But yet, like Altuve, he's capable of giving you leadoff pop. He's capable, obviously, of hitting for a good enough average. And I think that he's a guy, simply put, the other reason why is because Brantley is a guy that a lot of people were pushing for. Brantley's a 300 hitter. Brantley's not going to be ready for the start of the regular season. And you don't know what he's going to be when he first comes back. So I don't know what I'm getting from Michael Brantley, and therefore I don't think that's the right spot for him to hit and to put him in that position when it's something he's never done before. I think Bregman's the kind of guy that takes this and takes the responsibility that goes with it, understanding that they need me right now here, and I know I can do this. And I really think the biggest factor for me is just his command of the strike zone.
I don't really care much about the, like, having done it before. Dusty's different. Dusty does believe in that. He believes in, like, lineup or batting order comfortability, for lack of a better way to say that. He likes certain players that hit in certain spots, and he believes, okay, this guy hits better in the three spot than he does in the five spot. I'm going to use this guy in the three spot. That's the old.
And he loves the feng shui as well.
Yeah. And Dusty's been right about that, so it's not a criticism. I'm one where I don't really care about, like, have you done it before in specific things. And I would have to look, too. I'm not sure Alex Bregman's hit lead off a whole lot versus Brantley in their entire career. So it's like both of these guys are probably doing something that they haven't done a lot. Just pulled it up real quickly on Baseball Reference. Brantley's actually played 215 games or 214 starts in the leadoff spot, whereas Alex Bregman has done it 22 times. So, like, Brantley's done it 10 times more than Alex Bregman. That said, I don't really care about have you done it for me lately, done it before, et cetera, et cetera. And I hadn't thought about Brantley, and someone actually texted in after you said that, 5399, Brantley at leadoff, that way Pena can get his two spot back. There are two names for me that stick out more than anything. It wasn't Michael Brantley. Now, you brought up the point, Michael Brantley, opening day seems like it's in doubt at this point. Very best case scenarios in question. So we might even be able to eliminate Brantley from this conversation for opening day. But it does allow you to put Pena in the two spot if you went that way and you bring up the lineup feng shui. Brantley in the leadoff spot actually helps the lineup feng shui because you go Brantley lefty, Pena lefty, and you can do your Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu, and everything falls into place. So from a lineup feng shui point of view, it kind of helps. I'm not a huge fan of Pena. A lot of people are saying Jeremy Pena. And Poncho and I might fight.
Over this. I like it.
Because Poncho and I have had a long – Poncho and I agree with a lot of things, and I respect Poncho a lot. I think he's got a brilliant mind. We disagree a lot what we want from a leadoff spot. Poncho is like, I want some speed. I want a guy who can get on base, and whenever he gets on base, that pitchers have to respect that speed. I personally don't care about speed in the leadoff spot. The thing that I want more than anything else from a leadoff guy is a guy who gets on base at a high clip. He gets on base a lot because outs matter. Like, the team's trying to get 27 outs. So outs are precious. Give me a dude in the leadoff spot that gets out fewer than the other people. And Pena just doesn't do that enough. Pena had a sub-300 on-base percentage last year. You shouldn't have a sub-300 on-base percentage guy leading off your lineup ever, even if you're a bad team. You should never have a sub-300 guy leading off for you ever. Bregman, to me, is the guy that I like the most, Blankers, to your point. I love his command of the zone. Poncho's right. Bregman's not somebody who's going to scare pitchers with his speed. Don't care.
Don't care either,
Who's on base for run producers that are behind him.
I understand the people pushing for Pena. If you're going to the old school traditional, this is what a typical leadoff hitter should look like.
Sure.
And speed and stolen bases and things like that. But we're well beyond that. And we've seen it from the Springer era to the Altuve era to a guy like Bregman. If you got command of the strike zone and you get on base, who cares how fast you are? You're setting the table for the middle of your lineup, which is as powerful and capable as any lineup in baseball, of just knocking people in, putting crooked numbers on the board, and getting you off to the right start, whether it be to a game or an inning.
King of Twitch brings up the second name that intrigues me a lot. Okay. A lot. I'm very intrigued by this option a lot. Because when we talk about Kyle Tucker, we talk about where he's at in this lineup. A lot of times this lineup could potentially have Kyle Tucker hitting sixth. Like, is he behind Abreu? Where is he? You know, if you're trying to separate the lefties with Yordan. And we like the idea, because we think Kyle Tucker is one of the best offensive players on this team. He gets on base a lot. He is your best base stealer. He might not be your fastest guy, but he steals more bases than anybody else on this team. So you have the option there. And what Kyle Tucker gives you is he gives you the same explosiveness that you had from Jose Altuve, a dude that's going to flirt with 30 home runs. He gives you the same explosiveness that you had with George Springer. Whenever a pitcher, they have to respect your speed, but they also have to respect the fact that you can ambush him and drive the ball out of the park. So the top two for me, I lean Bregman because he's like a true on-base guy, sees pitches, sees a lot of pitches, which is great to have in a leadoff guy because everybody else gets to see those pitches away as well. He takes walks. He has great command of the zone. Bregman, to me, would be great in the leadoff spot. But from like an entertaining, energetic, has some pop, has some speed, gives you a little bit of what George Springer gave you, gives you a little bit of what Jose Altuve gave you, I would love to see 50 games of Kyle Tucker as the leadoff man for the Houston Astros.
No, I can see your point. And look, we've talked about the fact that he should probably, and no lineup, I've said no lineup should capitalize more on the switch in the rules for the shift. He's a guy that's going to capitalize because it's not, no longer is it boom or bust. No longer does he feel like he's either got to hit one out for or hit one off the wall for extra bases or strike out because he can't get a base hit any other way. He's going to capitalize. He's already showing you, even with the World Baseball Classic, look, he's got a command of the zone. He can hit for power. He can hit for average. He can steal some bases. And he's. I think you're right. I think we've narrowed it down. There's really only two choices in my mind for that leadoff spot that's going to give you your best chance every single night from that position, and that is either Bregman or Tucker because they have the skill set to do what you need them to do at the top of the lineup, and power is part of that. Bregman still has periodic pop. Tucker, we know, has power. So those are the kind of guys that can do what you need them to do at the top of the lineup the way Altuve did.
I'm Team Tucker on this one, but I'm going to go 2 months into or eight to 10 weeks into the future here. What if Tucker's really good at leadoff?
I just thought about
great.
That as well.
Would
you
great.
What if either guy? What if you leave out? Would you leave Tucker there?
Altuve.
And have Altuve bat second?
No.
But what if Tucker's awesome at it?
No. I wouldn't.
He's on base. He's got the speed. Altuve can drive him home.
Yeah.
It would be way better for Altuve in terms of RBI numbers, and because he would have a real person in front of him instead of Maldonado. No offense, Maldi. Maldi's skinny. He's a skinny person.
You're onto something here. I have said for a long time that Jose Altuve is the prototypical three-hole hitter. Because Jose Altuve, yeah, he'll draw some walks, but he's not a dude who sees a lot of pitches. He's very aggressive, which is fine. That's why Jose Altuve is so good. And he has pop, too, right? Jose Altuve is the perfect three-hole hitter. A dude that you want in the three-hole is a guy who has pop, can drive the ball out of the yard, can spark an inning, because that spot in the lineup bats with two outs, nobody on, more than any other spot. And quite frankly, you don't need to have a great on-base percentage guy at number three. So Jose Altuve, in my mind, has forever been the perfect three-hole hitter. So that actually, I think, would actually like potentially catapult the Astros even to being even a better lineup once he gets back. Is if whoever's in that leadoff spot, whether it's Tucker, whether it's Bregman, they're so good at it that they stay there, and it allows Altuve to goes into what in my mind is a natural three spot position for him. One thing to consider real quick with this though is lineup feng shui. Like if Tucker's hitting lefty, you're probably going to have a two hole. Well, I don't know. Like would he go Tucker, Brantley, lefty, lefty, 1-2? I tend to doubt it.
See, here's the thing. I also think quickly. I know we got to go to break.
Let's talk about it on the other side. Is that cool?
Okay.
Yeah, let's hit it on the other side. What were you want to tease it? What you were going to say?
Just the fact that Altuve controls a lot of that when he's coming back to dictate if you leave him where, put him somewhere else or put him back where he's accustomed to normally at leadoff.
Yeah. Let's address what it would look like, too, with Altuve not in the leadoff spot if everything works right, and then the lineup feng shui. And I've said a long time, I've said this forever, Blankers and Joe, that in Dusty, I trusty. And I will never, ever say anything bad about Dusty Baker's lineups. Y'all have joked with me about how far that's going to go. There is one thing that Dusty could do on opening day where I'm not even going to make it to opening day. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 97.5.
Tell you how you can make it to opening day and well beyond and have all your hair back again. That's see my good friend Doc Linville, because Doc Linville's a game changer. Doc Linville's going to get you your hair back. If you have thinning or pattern baldness and you think there's nothing I can do but shave it or try those sprays and creams and foams that mask the problem, nope, there's a bigger, better solution, and it's your own hair. It's called the Neograft procedure. In my opinion, Doc Linville's the best in the business at it, and he does it right here in Houston, Texas. Quite simply, it's taking hair where you're never going to lose it. Genetically, you're never going to lose it on the sides and the back, and putting it where you need it most. Maybe it's because you need some in your hairline. Maybe you need it on the top back of your head or in other areas. The procedure works, people, because I'm living proof. So is John Granato. A lot of people have done it here at the station. They all rave about the results because of the fact that Doc Linville knows what he's doing, and he can do it for you, too. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, if you go to 975hair.com right now, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. For you, it's free. Ask all the questions. Find out about the procedure, the financing. And the big thing that won me over was 95%+ of all the follicles moved, stay, and grow, and are with you for the long haul. That's what was the absolute over-the-top for me to do the actual thing, procedure. You should check it out for you, too. It costs you nothing. If you don't want to do it, just walk away. If you want to do it, set up the appointment, work on getting it done, and find out like I did. It's a game changer when you get up every day and have more self-confidence, looking in the mirror, knowing you got your hair back. Tell them I sent you by. They're great people, and they absolutely will take care of you. It's Doc Linville and his staff at 975hair.com.